So I was telling a Wednesday afternoon group that a few years ago at Rayburn Camp, I write the curriculum at Rayburn Camp, so I write it every year, and I wrote the curriculum that year about bugs in the Bible. Anything to get kids to read the stories, and remember that. So anyway, we did bugs in the Bible, so we did John the Baptist eating those locusts, and we did a study of Proverbs, particularly the one that says, look to the ant, you sluggard, just encouraging hard work. We read the Exodus and the plagues that led up to it, including those locusts. Anyway, I did a whole thing. 3 days of lessons, but I was missing one bug. Couldn't think of one. And finally, I did a lesson on the Beatitude using bees. Be merciful. Be someone who hungers and thirsts after righteousness. So it was a reach, but that's what I did. So working with the text this week, I've come to understand, I think, not was that only cheesy, it was just plain wrong. Because it was not faithful to the intent of the text or the nature of the Beatitudes. What Jesus is not doing is giving a list of commands. Right? It's not that, blessed are the meek, so you better be meek. Blessed are those who mourn, so what? There aren't even any verbs in the Greek. The Greek reads something like, the meek, blessed. Peacemakers, blessed. Like that. Like, it's a description of how life is. These are not laws, not requirements for entrance into the kingdom of God. They describe the way of God in the world, where God is to be found and with whom. So just back up for a minute. All four Gospels are showing us this man, Jesus. The authors are saying, so there's this guy, Jesus, and he changed my life. And I think he can change yours. And here, let me tell you about him. And the gospel writers are going, I didn't know him, but I know people who knew people who knew people. And this is what they said. This is what they told me. And they say that when you're in his presence, it's like being in the presence of God. And the gospel of Matthew, among other things, is showing us Jesus in a particular way. Matthew is writing to people who were either Jews or were very familiar with Judaism. And Matthew presents Jesus as a kind of Moses figure. For example, do you remember that old story about Moses as a baby in the bulrushes? Mm-hmm. With a cruel, paranoid ruler threatening to kill all baby boys. And so his mom puts him in a basket and puts him there. You know how that goes. So Matthew then tells us the story of Jesus. His parents, Mary and Joseph, had to flee from Egypt to Egypt when Jesus was a baby. Why? Because there was a cruel, paranoid ruler who was going to kill all baby boys. So it meant to go, oh, Jesus is a kind of Moses figure. In the same way, the reading today begins a three-chapter sermon that Matthew calls the Sermon on the Mount. Luke calls it a sermon on the plain. That's for another sermon. But Matthew has Jesus go up a mountain and essentially deliver a new law or fulfill the law. Just as Moses had gone up a mountain, Mount Sinai, and received the law, the Ten Commandments. And the way Matthew writes it, that Sermon on the Mount is in chapters 5, 6, and 7. You can do that for Sunday afternoon reading. But here's how he begins, with the Beatitudes. And in a different way from how it was with Moses, though, there's no thunder and lightning and smoke, no drama, and the tone of it is not commanding, actually, even though with Moses there was smoke and thunder and lightning, but even that was not a list of you better do this, so much as, I'll be your God, you be my people, and here's how we're going to live together. That's sort of the tone of the Ten Commandments. Like, don't steal. Don't lie. You know? The way a parent would go, this is a good way to live. Anyway, here, Jesus gathers his newly called followers around him, and he sits down, like any good rabbi does, because that's how rabbis teach, because they're going to be there for a while. And he says something like this. You've agreed I've said, I've told you that, and John told you before, that the kingdom of God is very near, almost seeking us out, almost like that moment just before the first kernel of popcorn pops. And when it pops, you know what's coming, because they're just going to start with this one. It's kind of like that. The kingdom of God is very near. And here's what it looks like. It looks like people who don't bow down to what the world says brings life and happiness. It looks like people who aren't perfect, but who are broken, who are poor in spirit and meek and persecuted, but who have not lost their souls. Remember that Matthew is writing to a community that is under persecution. Those who gathered around Jesus were often those who were the downtrodden and the humiliated, and those who not only had lost money, but had also lost hope and faith. In one translation I read about poor in spirit, one translation is those who've had the wind knocked out of them. Spirit, the breath, you know when you lose your breath. Those who not only lost hope in this world, but had lost hope that there was another world to come even, like there was nothing to hope for. Poor in spirit. Jesus is not saying you have to be like that. It's not a list of requirements, characteristics to which you should aspire to make God bless you. These are undesirable conditions that characterize no one when God's will is done. And those listening would understand, would see themselves in his words. It's a description not only of how it is with many of them, but of us too. It's a description of where God is. Right there. Blessing. Right there. Right here. And those people, you know how sometimes you talk to someone and you find out maybe a little bit about their life, and you just think, I had no idea you were carrying that around. Bless your heart. Bless your heart. It's sort of like that. Jesus starts talking about people in general first, I guess. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who mourn, he says. And then he switches at the end. In case we missed it, blessed are you. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely. This is not when they disagree with you. That's not persecution. He switches, though, to blessed are you. He knows he's addressing people who have hope, have lost hope, and lost who knows what. And he knows that the ones who would sit there listening to him are those who need it in the depths of their soul. The poor, the broken ones, those who are struggling with who knows what in their lives. You know some of them. Maybe it's you right now. But there are so many going through so many things, and you know just a little of their struggle, and you just want to say, as I said, you just want to go, oh, just bless your heart. And that's what God says, too. That's what God says, too. And the blessing of God and the grace and the mercy and the mantle of glory are there. In this world right now, I don't even know what to say. It's hard to find the words. That truth doesn't matter. That power is the realm of the ethically unbound and the morally bankrupt. That narrative can knock the wind out of you. And how do you live in a world like that? Jesus offers us a compelling alternative. Here is real power, he says. Here is true life. Here's what matters. And here's what leads to happiness. This is a balm, like a bomb, like a B-A-L-M bomb, a healing, a promise for souls who are wounded by the world. And it's a bomb, an exploding, it explodes the discourse of the world saying that there's another way. There's another way. And there's a way to find our way back to it. And now more than ever, we're going to need those who can teach us how to mourn and find the blessedness in it. We need those who know the value of gentleness, who know how to take one more step when we've had the wind knocked out of us, when we are poor in spirit, so that we can join our Creator in ushering in among us the kingdom where we all see justice and love kindness and walk humbly with God. May God bless you as you think about these things.